National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The Church has always had great concern for the little ones among us, and today, when babies with Down syndrome are being singled out for extermination through abortion, that concern is even more important. This week on Register Radio, we talked to Register correspondent Loretta Brown about Catholic groups that help those with disabilities enter more fully into Catholic life, especially the sacraments. Plus, what are the hottest trends among Register readers right now? What are the stories that are trending? One story that caught our attention: Iceland mourns the loss of a glacier, while Icelanders and others with Down syndrome become an endangered species. But there's a lot more in our trending box at the Register, so stay tuned, and we'll talk to Elisa Murphy, the Register's managing editor of digital assets, for a roundup of hot headlines. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen, a senior editor for the Register. Hi, Matthew.
Hello, how are you?
Matthew, today you have Loretta sitting right next to you because you're both in our Washington studio, which is just awesome when you can have a conversation face-to-face.
It is, yeah. And Loretta's doing an rather impressive amount of work for us at the moment on the Register.
That's right. So Loretta has been our national correspondent. So she's covering national news. And every now and then, Loretta, you get to cover something that's not so political or such a difficult topic. And this week, or the last couple of weeks, you were able to write a nice story about Catholic ministries that focus on reaching out to those with disabilities and just pulling them in and keeping them in the Church. We're going to turn to that story in a minute, but you just got back from a wonderful pilgrimage, and you took a little time off to see a Catholic part of the world in France. So where'd you go, and what did you do?
I had a great pilgrimage. Yes, I was in France. I'm a little nervous about pronouncing all the place names, so I'll just preface it by saying I don't really speak a lot of French. But we kind of studied the monastic background, which is very, there's a very rich history there in France. So we went to Vesselay, Cluny, these gorgeous historic monasteries, or ruins of monasteries in the case of Cluny. And we were very lucky. I went with this group called the Pilgrim Project, and they're a wonderful group. They help young adults go on pilgrimages. They go everywhere. They go to Israel, France, as I went, England. Just a lot of good places. And their goal is to kind of give young adults, millennials, the experience of learning about kind of the wealth of the faith tradition that we have, and kind of encountering in a very real way these sites where, you know, amazing things in church history happened. And what's really cool, I think, for me was having some experts along with us. So like in the Cathedral of Chartres, for example, we had Malcolm Miller, who's an expert on that cathedral. I think he was recommended by Rick Steves at one point. It was really amazing. I was looking at this stained glass window and thinking, okay, these images are amazing. But then he talked about that one window for an hour, and he talked about the scriptural exegesis in the window about, so there was this huge theological lesson to be learned from this one window. And it was really amazing to me. These people were able to sit in the cathedral and learn about scripture from this one window. And it was a very deep lesson. Yeah.
So, and obviously the preachers would have used those windows. It's not like they just, you know, the people just sat there and understood from looking at the window all of that exegesis, right? I mean, they used this as a teaching tool.
Well, there's the old saying among the creators of the Gothic cathedrals that the stained glass was called the Bible for the illiterate. Mm-hmm. So the serfs and the common people who couldn't read could go and get the whole of salvation history, the whole of the Old and the New Testament, told to them in these beautiful pictures. But for you as a millennial, sorry for
<It's>
it sounds like a derogatory term now. I know.
It's okay.
But what were some of the reactions of your fellow pilgrims?
Oh, I think we were all really blown away. It was very funny to me because I think some of us went into that cathedral, like looking at the itinerary, and we saw, okay, well, we're going to talk to a historian for a huge chunk of time here. We're not quite sure, you know, what to expect. Maybe we had enjoyed the wine tasting in Vesele, or, but it was... it was funny how many people talked about it after. On the bus, we talked about it, like just walking around talking to others. And I think we were just so struck by the depth of the history and the storytelling there. And so many of us lingered in that cathedral. And it was funny because one of my fellow pilgrims mentioned to me, she was like, we would actually say mass in these cathedrals. We had a priest with us, so we would have our masses in these places we were going. And often she was saying, like, passersby would stop and just kind of be surprised that there were young people actually using the cathedral for mass. So I think in that way, it was really great to kind of reinvigorate the original, like, use of these historic places.
So are you planning to go back and spend a month just to look at the rest of the windows? Or?
Oh, it's tempting. I mean, honestly, I did wish I had a lot more time there. I do want to go back.
Well, this idea of people learning differently from stained glass windows, and now, of course, we want to really talk to you about your great story on the disabilities, on the way that the church is so concerned about those with disabilities, but being sure they're not left behind or overlooked.
Right, right. This was a very important story for me. I have a brother with Down syndrome and autism, so I've seen firsthand and worked in some of these communities, and it was fascinating to me to see how recently and how well the church has kind of risen up to respond to this call. So a little over 40 years ago, as I mentioned in my story, the USCCB wrote this wonderful statement on the pastoral care of persons with disabilities in the church. And it was a call to expand the missions, the outreach to them. And I think they refined it in a very good way just even 2 years ago in 2017 to reflect our greater knowledge of the kind of the struggles that people with certain disabilities have, you know, different communication issues, different technological advances. And a wonderful group I spoke with was the National Catholic Partnership on Disability. And they've been doing some fabulous work. They came out of that statement of the USCCB 40 years ago. And they've just been, what I really love is that they talk to the families. They talk to the experts in the area, and it's not, I think sometimes there are well-meaning people in this area maybe that don't quite understand. It's difficult, you know, if you aren't, you know, trained in the area or well-experienced in the area to understand why, you know, for example, someone with autism is scared by loud noises or, you know, engaging in a certain non-normative, you know, supposedly behavior, but... they worked with the families and experts, and they really have some terrific resources. I was very blown away. They had, they have programs and books and pamphlets. Like one book was designed by this sweet family it started as like their son's Boy Scout project. He wanted to help his little sister attend mass better, and she has autism, so he designed this book, and his family helped, and they have all these resources. But and I also spoke with a really amazing group in Newark that they worked with applied behavioral analysis, and they actually tested out this program that was very successful, helping children with autism attend mass through this kind of behavioral training, and they partnered with this university. And it was really beautiful to see just how innovative and seriously they took this, and kind of the good results they saw out of that. But it was moving to just to be able to see all these different resources. And
absolutely.
I think, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. I love the story, and that's, you know, part of the reason I wanted to have you on. Of course, I wanted to talk about the pilgrimage, but I love that story. I was proofing it in the last print edition. It ran in our last print edition, which is the, let's see, what, actually, sorry, right. It's September 1st print edition. And so just we forget that we need to do different things to reach different segments of people, And, you know, we've got this special section coming up on the Eucharist that's going to be published at the end of September, so in our September 29th print edition, because, you know, studies have found that people don't understand what the Eucharist is, and sometimes that's because we use the same watered-down ways of trying to educate young kids about what the Eucharist is, and they're not getting it sometimes, and adults aren't getting it or remembering it either. And so, you know, it says a lot about how we need to constantly be looking at how we communicate the faith. And one of the most important ways to do so is in a lived way, you know. And so you going on this pilgrimage and looking and experiencing, you know, the culture of the church, the very ancient, old culture of the church, and seeing it kind of with new eyes and for the first time, it renews your faith. And these efforts that these parishes and these families are doing to help other family members renews the faith, not only for the people that they're seeking to serve, but those who are actually creating the catechesis, you know? And so I think it's just awesome. Thank you for bringing these kind of stories to us and your family's experiences too, you know, because this comes from your own home, you know, growing up, that you saw that there was this need. Loretta, before we end, which we're just about to end, and we're going to go a little long on this segment because I want to get to this, you know, unfortunately, people with disabilities are not making it into the world because of abortion. And this is a beat that you cover very, very regularly because you're our national correspondent. What's happening on this front right now? There's the Missouri ban that I wanted to mention at least, and then there's another development that that I think you want to share with us. So what's happening on the abortion front, or should I say the battle for life?
Right. Well, yeah, certainly I think it's very interesting, this what's going on in Missouri. The 8-week ban has been, there's a preliminary injunction against it now that a judge has kind of stopped it. But in that same ruling, he allowed the ban on selective abortion on the basis of a Down syndrome diagnosis. And I think that's significant, and it's just a good thing to see, because as you mentioned, the abortion rates after a prenatal diagnosis of Down syndrome are really astonishing and scandalous, and it's very high in Europe, in Iceland. It's nearly 100% in Iceland, I believe, was the CBS report that was done. Yeah, but it's in I think it's 92% in France, and in the U.S., I think the most recent estimates were the Charlotte Lazier Institute said, I think it was like 62%, which is still, it's very high. And it's sad. It was very heartbreaking, I know, to the scientist who discovered the cause of Down syndrome, Jerome Lejeune. He was always heartbroken that his discovery of this special extra chromosome was used, you know, in these, to identify, to search and destroy mission is what he, you know, what he would say. And this is actually the first time that a selective ban on abortions of those with Down syndrome has been left in place. In North Dakota, they have, I think, a broader one that's in place, but this is the first, like, specific one. So we'll see down the road legally what happens with that, but I think it's nice to see. It's nice to see the concern and to see that being left in place. I know I think the Attorney General of Missouri made some good comments on that as well.
And not to turn to politics too quickly, but you are concluding a story about the 2020 Democrats and their positions on abortion. Just a little teaser for our audience about that story that should be on ncregister.com very soon.
Right. Yeah. So they. A lot of 2020 Democrats, I think it was nine of them in the field, came out in opposition to the Helms Amendment, which is a ban on U.S. foreign aid funding being used for abortions overseas. And that's just, you know, it's not a popular position polling-wise. I think it's just another evidence of how the abortion lobby, I recently wrote about, they have this wish list, they have this blueprint for how they want abortion laws to go, and actually doing away with the Helms Amendment was on it. So I think it's just another step of the 2020 Democrats kind of playing into Planned Parenthood, NARAL, et cetera, you know, these abortion activist groups' wish list and vision for abortion. And it's, I mean, I think it might not prove to be the smartest set of moves for them, given how these sorts of issues poll. But, I mean, we'll see how that plays out. But.
So what you're saying is it's the agenda of elites as opposed to perhaps the wishes of the voters.
Right, exactly. Right. It's kind of some inside baseball being played by these abortion lobbyists. Okay.
Well, you're doing great work. Thank you for keeping us abreast of all of this. I mean, from the cultural side to the unfortunate political side, I know it's not always easy, and I'm glad you refueled by going on a pilgrimage. So we look forward to the rest of your reporting, and invite our listeners to go to ncregister.com and take a look at Loretta Brown's piece, Catholic Ministries Focus on Greater Inclusivity for Those with Disabilities. When we come back, Matthew and I will talk to Elisa Murphy about other trending news at ncregister.com. So stay tuned here on Register Radio.
Have you heard who's reading the Register? Why, it's Matthew Bunsen.
The National Catholic Register is that rarest of institutions in Catholic media, striving always to be faithful, orthodox, timely, and dedicated to journalistic excellence. Catholics know they can always depend on the Register for the news they need to know from an authentically Catholic perspective.
For a 3-month free subscription to the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 3 months free banner.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen, who's in our Washington, D.C. studio. And we have Elisa Murphy joining us today. And Elisa is our Managing Editor of Digital Assets, and that means she manages our website and our Twitter feed and our Facebook and every way that we try to reach the world out there and who's using the internet. So, Elisa, thanks for being on the show today.
No, it's great to be with you guys.
Yeah, so we just got through talking to Loretta about some stories that are very interesting, but they're also trending stories. And one of them relates to Iceland. And Loretta mentioned this story in the last segment. And it's that Iceland has recently mourned the loss of a glacier. And we found that quite ironic because they have basically extinguished men and women with Down syndrome in their country. So what's going on with this story that our audience seemed to really, I can't say enjoy reading, but they read it a lot.
Yes, yes. And it was a huge trending story just last weekend. The country of Iceland did, in fact, mourn a glacier, holding a funeral for a glacier that used to be a certain size and now it's dwindled down to a small amount where it cannot now be called a glacier, to the point where, you know, attendees took a 2-hour hike up the side of a volcano, had a special plaque. Children were there to lay it. And I think the plaque itself was called A Letter to the Future, and it was placed on the ground there, and it said, "This monument is to acknowledge that we know what is happening and what needs to be done," and then adding the ominous, "Only you know if we did it." And it was definitely a call for care for climate change, and of course, you know, we are all called to be stewards of God's creation,
right.
But with this international news, it only begs the question, why is Iceland not putting the same concern and care for those in the womb and those with a heart and a soul that deserve to be born? As I think Loretta had mentioned, it was a CBS report that had said it was 85% of expectant mothers in the country who undergo prenatal testing do indeed always decide to abort 100% when it comes to a child potentially having Down syndrome. And just to see the country really take the time and care to have such a concern with what some people might call melting ice, a glacier, and putting it in the same context of, you know, we need to preserve and care about this. I mean, putting a plaque on the ground, I can't even imagine how many plaques you would need for how many lives have been lost because, you know, potentially Down syndrome is a factor.
So you brought this story to our Register audience through something that you've been doing for the last just the last couple of weeks. And it's you've titled it Listening In. And then you list the stories that lit up the Internet this week, usually five stories. And it's just some takes on trends of the week. I love the idea. I'm so grateful that you're doing it. First of all, how did that idea come to be? And why is it titled Listening In?
You know, I think it actually came from some of our editorial calls that we have every day, just because there are so many stories that break and that do touch our audience and the nation and the world, that sometimes, you know, they're just maybe glimmers or glimpses of something, and we aren't able to really hone in on what we might be able to learn from them or what our Catholic faith tells us about them. So it's a great opportunity to catch these little moments that, you know, do tug at your heart or warm your heart sometimes, and really try to bring a real lens to it and see, you know, how can we move this story along before it's lost? Because we know the digital landscape just moves so quickly.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love it. I love the idea, because the Register, as a newspaper, we're not only about news. I mean, part of our legacy, and you know, you remember when you held newspapers in your hand, it wasn't all the news section. I mean, it had a culture section. It had an art section. It had features. And as a newspaper, we still do that, even if everyone isn't reading it in our broad sheets. You know, if they're reading it on the web, I still want them to have the feeling that they're reading a newspaper that not only is about the news, which, let's face it, sometimes it doesn't actually affect our lives. We want to know it because we want to be good stewards of the world that God's given us in the civic world. But what we try to do at Register Radio, and what we try to do at the Register, is give you news and topics that affect your life, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's why we move from news sometimes into these stories that are heartwarming, or touch upon things that we live with, you know? I just want to bring up one because it really caught my attention, and it's on the same trend of special needs. I don't know why I'm on that subject right now, but it's the dignity of a good haircut. What is that story that has been trending for a couple of weeks now, Lisa?
You know, it's a beautiful story when you consider how many times, I don't know if this applies to you, Matthew, but how many times it's just wonderful to go into a salon and you might feel kind of down or not feel like yourself, and all of a sudden you feel a bit transformed by moments in the chair there with a stylist. And when one considers those with special needs and disabilities that perhaps have wheelchairs or have access to those moments, four stylists actually got together created, you know, charitably an opportunity for residents at Misericordia, a home for 600 children and adults with profound intellectual and developmental disabilities, the opportunity to have a haircut and a makeover, if you will. And it's really transformed their lives in a special way, in a unique way, because we all want to feel good and nice. And a lot of times that kind of care and concern, you know, isn't applied to those with special needs.
Right. That was written by Jay Kopp. Great story. I love it.
That came out over the weekend.
In my case, a haircut in a salon usually takes about 5.5 minutes. So, but to the point of the story, one of the sort of the golden thread running through this is the restoration of dignity, this idea of self-worth, but also just to be treated with proper dignity that is owed to them.
Yes. You know, and I think that gets lost a lot in our culture every day, where, you know, even when you walk by someone, you're not thinking of eye contact or a smile. And I think especially sometimes, you know, people don't know how to react to someone that has a special need or disability. And so this, the way these stylists all came together to provide this need, I mean, to really see that as a need is really unique, because a lot of people don't consider it. But I mean, some of the quotes from the people that had the makeover, you know, they felt like a queen, you know, like their whole entire perception of themselves is changed. And in our, how we feel about ourselves every day does impact us quite a bit.
Right. So, you know, we're all like out of time, and there's so much to talk about. And one thing I want to say is we are going to miss these listen-in blogs that you've been doing, because you are getting ready to take a major leave for maternity leave. You are due on Labor Day, which is just a few days away. With your first child.
Perfect timing.
Optimal timing on that. And I will be listening in a different way to some cries. And very exciting. My husband and I have been trying to have a child now for about 6 years. So it was a real blessing and an answer to many, many prayers. And yes, so we are looking forward to welcoming our little daughter into the world, Lord willing, next week.
Yeah, excellent. Well, Elisa, we are going to miss you, as I said, and we hope that when you come back, you'll have a lot of things to share with us, and some, I guess, some new wisdom and probably some new interests. But we'll try to keep, you know, keep these trending things before our audience. Matthew and I will have another one of our team members on to bring these trending hits on the Register site to our listeners. But we do ask our listeners to pray for Elisa Murphy and for her husband and their new their little girl, who will be born very soon. Stay tuned to ncregister.com and listen in again to Register Radio. At NC Register, you'll find more news, analysis, and commentary. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.